Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
You're listening to the LA Football Podcast. What's going on, LA? My Ramley, our Rams fans out there, this is the LA Football Show, Rams House edition, as we chat about another unfortunate loss, this one to the Arizona Cardinals. We'll get all into it. We're probably more going to focus on the future and if there's anything that can be done than rehashing the game, but we'll obviously touch on it and get into it. So I'm Ryan Dyer, joined by Jamal Madney. What is up, my man? Happy to have you on as always. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, brother. Excited to get into it. Again, I wish it was under better circumstances about speaking to the Rams, but I'm actually very excited about the conversation we're going to have today. Bigger picture, strategic conversation, looking towards the future. So always a pleasure to do this with you and get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Show is always brought to you by our friends at BetOnline. Head to betonline.ag today on your mobile device or desktop. Use the promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV. You get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So if you deposit $100, you get $50 free to play with. I probably would not bet on the Rams anymore, but you can bet on this Victory Bell game, bet on the Chargers, bet on basketball, hockey, whatever you want. BetOnline has. BetOnline.ag, promo code BELIEVE, where the game starts. All right, so Rams fall to Cardinals 27-17. The battle of the backups, Colt McCoy versus John Walford. Colt McCoy run out. The Rams offense, once again, Jamal, looked pretty putrid. We had hoped, previewing this game, that it might unlock some play calling for Sean McVay, and that's no disrespect to Stafford because he is the better quarterback, but maybe having someone of mobility would kind of let Sean McVay get creative and do some different things. And we did see Wolford outside the pocket more, but outside of that, it was kind of the same old, same old. Your initial takeaways from another bad loss by this Rams team.
Yeah, Ryan. I mean, again, everything starts with the offense and was encouraged. First drive, scripted opportunity, 14 plays, 57 yards, culminating in a field goal. You saw some emphasis on the run game. You saw Bryce Perkins coming in there in a package. You saw some safe throws and just sort of moving the ball down the field. You even saw fourth down conversion on that opening drive. So there was a lot to be encouraged about going up 3-0. And then it was nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. There were 4-3 and outs and one first down on another drive that ended up in a fumble that the Cardinals scored on. And the next scoring drive came midway through the third quarter, really aided by a short field. And there was kind of a coverage, a sort of a play call bust there where it felt like the Cardinals got all the way to Walford on the pass rush. And it was this sort of disjointed screen pass that went to Higbee for 25. And then that opened up a couple rollouts for Walford to hit Higbee and hit his check down. And then J.J. Watt gave us all the help we could have needed in terms of 10 penalty yards to ultimately get the Rams into the end zone to make the 10 points. And then the last drive was with 9 seconds left, total garbage time. So that really was the whole state of the offense yet again. Running game non-existent, 20 carries for 66 yards, lack of ability of Allen Robinson to get open, and I'm sure we're going to be talking lots of Cooper Kupp here, but it was so weird to see the box score at the end of that game in terms of the line where Cooper Kupp ended the game with -1 receiving yards. So really difficult all around, Ryan. Nothing seems to have been fixed. Nothing seems to have been changed. This is the worst offense in the NFL right now. I can't believe I'm saying these words with the Sean McVay team. And now the Rams are tied for the worst 9-game start by a defending Super Bowl champion in NFL history. So the state of the season is really in deep peril. And I have a hard time believing this team has a credible path to the playoffs at this stage when you have the likes of going on the road to Kansas City, going on the road to Seattle. And even though Green Bay isn't what they were, going on the road to Green Bay in winter is never easy. I mean, on those three games alone, you have a hard time believing they're going to win any of those, and that gets it to 9 losses. So it really feels like we need to start thinking about next year.
Yeah, I was on live right after with our beat writer, Ryan Anderson, so we kind of touched on this, but it's just perplexing how this offense has not evolved like really whatsoever. We talk about the rushing game, I think, every single week. You mentioned 20 carries, but 6 of those were from the quarterbacks and John Walford, and they threw in Bryce Perkins for some designed quarterback run play. So 14 carries between your running backs, 6 for Akers, 6 for Henderson, and 1 each for Brandon Powell and Kyren Williams, the rookie who got his first play. And obviously they want to work him in slowly, so we'll hopefully see him more down the stretch. But in a game where they could really do nothing passing, you have a backup quarterback, you would think logic would tell you we should probably run the ball a lot. Like, let's take the pressure off our quarterback and let's not throw it 36 times. Like, we have a backup. Like, let's run the football. It's shocking to me that still there is zero emphasis, zero respect, whatever word you want to use. There's just no desire to run the football. It'd be one thing, Jamal, if we were sitting here every week, and I feel like I get passionate about this topic every time because it's just mind-blowing to me. If we were sitting here every week and saying, man, they just were so inefficient, like 35 carries for 80 yards, 30 carries for 75 yards, 28 carries for 90 yards, like that'd be one thing. But they never crossed the 20 carry mark, and so we don't even know if this can wear a defense down, if these backs can get going. Anyone that really knows football, unless you're Zach Charbonnet playing, you need like 12, 13, 14 carries to kind of get things going. Your vision opens up more. It's kind of like in Madden when, have you progressed through a game and the vision cone kind of grows when you've had like some good throws or some good success. I mean, that's the same thing for a running back. You need those reps. And if you're getting off the field every other possession, like they like to rotate Cam Akers and Darrell Henderson, you're only getting 6 carries total for a 60-minute game. You can't expect these guys to just break one with that little of repetition. So my biggest takeaway yet again, John Walford was not good. I'm being very blunt. I mean, he's just not a very good backup. He's probably a bottom tier backup in this entire league. It's still hilarious to me that a year ago, many bloggers and podcasters called him like a starting caliber quarterback before Matt Stafford was here. I think that's proven itself very, very wrong, but no disrespect to him. He at least tried hard and played hard, but if you're not going to help him out by trying to run the football in any way possible, you deserve to lose. And for all of LA that is so hard on Brandon Staley and Joe Lombardi for the Chargers and what they're doing on offense, I think what the Rams are doing offense is way worse, because yes, they have injuries on the offensive line and they don't anymore have Cooper Kupp. But before this game, you still had Cooper Kupp. You still had Allen Robinson. Yes, you were missing pieces like Van Jefferson, but you have a Ben Skowronek. You have, outside of Cooper Kupp, not extreme talent, but you still have playmakers that you signed to this roster and had all of training camp to go through things with. And you have the running backs outside of Kyren Williams, who's been hurt all year, who you've had for the entire season. And yet there's just no formula or consistency other than saying, hey, whoever my QB is, just drop back 40 times and try to make a play. And it just hasn't worked. And there's been no adjustments. And I just don't understand it.
Yeah, Ryan. I mean, that's what's been so frustrating. And you see this with other coaches trying to do different things. Remember, we referenced last year with Belichick and in Buffalo and how the Patriots threw the ball like 5 times the whole night, given the weather, given their personnel. You see Andy Reid always tinkering and adjusting now without Tyreek Hill and approaching things a very different way. You see what Doug Peterson was trying to do earlier in the year with Jacksonville. You see what what's happening in Philadelphia and catering the offense to a Jalen Hurts, more college style, more sort of run spread concept with some big play over the top. And the consistent theme there, Ryan, is the great coaches, they scheme around their personnel. They don't ask their personnel to force the scheme. And the problem right now with McVay is he seems like he is like James Harden of the coaches, where I can only drive left. I only go left. And so if you're good enough to sort of stop it, you're going to stop it. It takes a lot to be good enough to stop it, but I'm a one-trick pony. I have one move and I'm going to go there. And I think that's the most disappointing element. And again, you wonder where his head is. It just doesn't feel like his head, his heart is into this season, because I have such a hard time believing that he's not an intelligent enough football guy. In my opinion, one of the 3 to 5 smartest guys offensively in football, no mm-hmm. question about it, that he can't see this and he doesn't realize this. And other people around him are not telling him this. And so to me, it just, I wonder where he is mentally in terms of his heart in wanting to do this year. And I go back to that of, I think he was a lot closer to retirement than we thought. And this now becomes a very unique opportunity for him, where I think the stakes have gone much lower. This team is last place in the division. There really isn't any expectation of the playoffs. You have 2 months. You have 8 weeks to really decide on a day-in, day-out basis, do I still want to do this going into next year? Does this still give me joy? Am I still excited to inspire a team and scheme an opponent and bring people together in a collective vision? Or is it really time for me? I'm just burnt out. Look, I might be 37, 38 years old, but I've really been coaching since I was 6, because I've been, you know, born to do this. And I've actually been doing this for 30 years and I'm just burnt out and I need to do something else. So for me, the fascination, there's a lot of things that are happening on the field in terms of adjustments. And we're going to get into it in terms of strategy and contracts and potential moves for the long term. The other dimension I'm really looking at is McVay these next 2 months to say, is this it, or does he have 1 or 2 more years in him?
Yeah, and 2 points for me on that. One, you know, if anyone listening right now, any Rams fans happen to listen to our Chargers show, we were defending Joe Lombardi because of personnel, saying like, you know, there's only so much you can do when the talent doesn't add up. So I want to be very clear here, because we're kind of saying the opposite for McVay. Like, you need to scheme your players better. And the reason that is, Cooper Kupp and Allen Robinson are way more talented than Josh Palmer and DeAndre Carter on the Chargers. So that's the big difference. If anyone happened to listen, like, the Chargers are without their top two receivers. The Rams are not. Well, they are without one now, which we'll get to. But going into this game, they had their top two receivers plus others. Plus, they have the running backs they started the season with. So that's the big difference there. The one main point, Jamal, that we haven't really talked about much, and so I want to hear your opinion on this. I think this season is really showing how valuable and important Kevin O'Connell was to this offensive coordinator. And I know the offensive coordinator in a Sean McVay era since he's been here has kind of been the afterthought, because McVay calls the plays. He's the offensive mind. It's his offense. He built it. He's the architect. He draws the blueprint, all that good stuff. But we don't know all that goes on behind the scenes. And there's a reason why his last two offensive coordinators, and Matt LaFleur and now Kevin O'Connell, are head coaches and have been pretty damn good head coaches. Kevin O'Connell with the Vikings has as many wins through nine games as the Vikings had last year through 17 games. They have 8 wins. They're 8-1 in the NFC. And they have a lot of the same pieces they had last year. And that's now a damn good football team. So I think Kevin O'Connell did a lot for this offense that a lot of people didn't recognize or know. And I think he took a lot off of Sean McVay's plate. And Liam Cohen, I know, who was with this team, went to Kentucky and now is back. So I know he knows the locker room, the vibe. But clearly he is not elevating Sean McVay, because I mean, that's with any business. The people around you elevate you. You can be the brightest, smartest CEO, owner, whatever. If you have a poor staff around you, they're going to bring you down. It's only, you need other people to build you up, no matter how smart, intelligent a leader you are. And I'm not trying to harp on Liam Cohen. I don't know him obviously personally or anything like that. I know he's a bright young mind, but I think this is really showing that Kevin O'Connell was very integral to what this team did at practice and preparation and game planning. Because even though McVay's called the plays, the OC typically draws up the script and then McVay will sign off on it. And so I think he was very involved in that. And in-game adjustments, he's in Sean's ear saying like, why are you running the ball 12 times instead of 30 when this team can't stop the run? What are we doing here? Like, let's change things up here. So your thoughts on that? I just think this loss to Kevin O'Connell now is really showing. I mean, another one, Shane Waldron up in Seattle, they're having success. So all these OCs that don't get a lot of love because of who McVay is, I think are now we're seeing those may have been actually pretty big losses.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
No, Ryan, I think you said it best there. I mean, Kevin O'Connell has more wins than Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur combined this year. So he's definitely doing something right in Minnesota. And it's what you're describing is sort of the college equivalent of the Nick Saban effect, where he loses coordinators every year and has to sort of restock his team and continue to stay excellent. I think the O'Connell loss in particular is significant and problematic around two dimensions. The first is, I think O'Connell still being hungry and young and aggressive and having an attention to detail and being innovative is very important energy to have on a team that just won a championship. When they're already feeling a little fat in the tummy, you can sense that they're losing their edge a little bit. They're content with their success and they feel like they have to defend something as opposed to go out and attack something in terms of this particular season. And I think not having O'Connell's energy of being young and hungry, I think has been problematic for this team from a cultural standpoint. Number two, and I think you alluded to this, I think O'Connell had McVay's ear and respect in a way that these assistants don't. I think O'Connell could have gone to McVay and said, "We're not running the ball enough. You need to change this up. Let me help you. I disagree with these elements. I disagree with how we're scheming guys. I disagree with the lack of involvement of Allen Robinson. I disagree with how much Stafford is favoring Cooper Kupp. I disagree with not getting Tutu Atwell involved more. I disagree with the lack of variety with the Brandon Powell. I disagree with how we're going to approach Van Jefferson when he gets back." And I think you can have those really collaborative, meaningful, back and forth, creative brainstorms when both sides respect each other. I think the problem right now is losing O'Connell. I think the assistants, albeit very young, intelligent guys, I think they're still young. And I think they're a bunch of yes men. And I think they're giving McVay all that he wants to hear. It's like what I heard on Business Insider earlier of an investor in Tesla. And he said, you know, the problem right now that I'm seeing with Elon is he's got too many yes men around him. And I think that's going to ultimately be a little bit of a downfall here in the midterm. He's not having enough people challenging his thinking. And I think O'Connell was one of those guys that could really challenge McVay's thinking and make McVay better. And I don't think he has that. And when you combine that with the fact that this team already sort of came in malaise into the season as the champs, now that energy and that respect is really missing in the locker room and you're seeing it.
Yeah. Well, and last point on that, you look at just, and I think this gets, I think experience a little bit gets overblown, but when it comes to being able to challenge the head coach, you kind of need that backbone to say like, well, look what I've done. You look at O'Connell, who when he was hired by the Rams was a young newer coach, but still had 3 years of QB coach experience and one full year as an OC with Washington. You look at Liam Cohen, in his NFL experience, two total years as an assistant receivers coach and an assistant quarterback coach, and then 1 year as an OC at Kentucky. So it's almost like he probably knows, but yeah, what you're saying, he's like, well, I don't really have the NFL pedigree experience to go challenge one of the greatest offensive minds we've ever seen. Whereas O'Connell was like, look, I've worked with three different quarterbacks. I've been an OC. Like, we need to change something up. And I came from the same place you came from in Washington. Like, we've been on a staff and whatnot. So I think that's absolutely to your point. We're seeing that lack of accountability almost, if you will. And I think they can get that back. Obviously, Liam Cohen is a bright mind. That's why he was brought in. But I think that he'll need to almost start challenging more in the future if this thing is going to get turned around, which I don't think this year it is. So let's talk that now. That's how we'll kind of end this. Let's look towards the future. This season, probably, but let's first touch on this. Cooper Kupp, we haven't even really talked about the biggest news of this game. Cooper Kupp, reports are a high ankle sprain and will miss quote-unquote significant time. So at this point, Jamal, do you just shut him down for the year, or is there even a shot? I mean, is there even a credible shot he could be back in 5 to 6 weeks?
Yeah, Ryan. So obviously, as we know today, the reports came out that he is going to get surgery on that high ankle sprain, and he's going to be on IR, and it's looking like a 4 to 6 week timeline. For me, I have a hard time believing this team is going to be in any sort of a playoff contention over the next 4 weeks. And so to me, at that point, there's really no point in bringing him back. I think for all intents and purposes, this should end his season. And we need to start getting ready to have him healthy and make another triple crown run next season, because now the clock turns 30 on Cooper Kupp the next time he's going to take the field. The clock turns 35 on Matthew Stafford in 2023, and the clock turns 32 on the great Aaron Donald going into 2023. So for me, I think this season starts becoming, I think you have 2 weeks here where there's an opportunity here, the Saints and then the Chiefs, to see what you can do. But if this is an 0-2 stretch, it's really all over, and it's time to start playing the younger guys and figuring out who your roster pieces are going to be going into next year, because I believe this team was constructed last year to have a 3-year window to go and win a title. And they went all in to win a title, and guess what? They won. And so it worked. And so right now the Rams and Les Snead are on house money. And I think there's one more year. There's one more season window opportunity in 2023 for this Donald, Kupp, Stafford core, Ramsey core, to make one more run at it. And now it becomes a conversation of, what do we need to do to try and do that? Are there things we can do where the price isn't too high, where we're jeopardizing 2024 and beyond to be able to do so?
So, okay, let's end with that then. So looking towards the future, and, you know, I've been saying since March, I believe all three of the big ones walk away at the same time. McVay, Stafford, Donald, I think they all retire the same offseason, whether it's next year, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, when their contracts are, I know they're a little different, but I think they all walk away at the same time. I actually ironically saw a report from Albert Breer last week saying that exact same thing, saying he's hearing that all three guys potentially could walk away at the same time. So I'm like, okay, maybe there's some credibility to my thought process. So that being said, and everything you just said, this team will absolutely need to make some moves this offseason to have that final, like, 1 year window. However, in doing that, if they mortgage the future yet again, which worked fine, I'm not harping on the past. I've talked all along how I agree with what they did. But if they do that again, and then you have your big three all walk away at the same time, this franchise could be in a very dark place in 2 or 3 years from now, especially with no first round or even second round draft picks. So my question to you is it worth it? Do an all in one more time this offseason, trade that 2024 first round pick for another premier player, push the salaries down the line, because you know, if Stafford and Aaron Donald retire, you're getting a lot of that money back. Or do you say, you know what? it's as much as we think we can maybe have this 1 year window, the future of this franchise and the future of how we are looked and perceived in the city of LA could be so far removed and detrimental if we mortgage everything away. So maybe we will look at some of these premier players we have and try to get back some draft picks and go after our quarterback of the future in 2024, say a la Caleb Williams or the LA legend at SC or someone else. What do you think is A, the right thing to do, and B, what they will do?
Ryan, it's such an interesting point. Do you double down and do you mortgage it again for another? Or do you say, hey, we won and let's pull it back and now try and bridge that gap? Because you also have to remember the value of the Rams as a franchise, their place in LA. They've come back now after 24 years. They won a Super Bowl. They won a Super Bowl very early. But there's an opportunity for whoever the fan base can grow with. That is going to ultimately become LA's team 8-10 years from now and own LA football the way the Lakers own basketball, the way the Dodgers own baseball. And so if I'm Stan Kroenke and I'm a billionaire owner and I'm a strategic guy, I'm thinking that bigger picture now. For me, it's not, is there a huge difference between getting a second Super Bowl title and a one Super Bowl title, or we got the one ring, let's see how we can really own LA. And the way to do that is to create some franchise players that you can grow with as a fan base. The problem with this team in particular is that we didn't grow necessarily with Aaron Donald. He started his career in St. Louis, had some incredible years as they've moved to LA, but it's hard to sort of be galvanized around a defensive tackle. We didn't grow up with Matthew Stafford. That was Detroit. He came here at the tail end of his career, won a Super Bowl. We're not going to have enough time to grow with Cooper Kupp because I think he's got a window here of another year or two where he's Cooper Kupp. And then I think he's going to tail off as naturally only anyone can do so given that usage rate. So you need the Caleb Williams. You need the Zach Charbonnet. Can you imagine, Ryan, if it was a Caleb Williams, Zach Charbonnet backfield for the Rams? You have the USC fan base and the UCLA fan base all become Rams fans. Can you imagine what that does to the valuation of this team, what that does to this team's brand in the community? I mean, it's whole next level ballgame. And so for me, I think it's the latter, that you've done what you can with this group. And you also have to acknowledge a little bit, Ryan, some of the realism that comes with winning a championship. Let's remember, we are the defending Super Bowl champions. No questions asked. But it's not like we were the number one seed in the NFC, okay? We were the number four seed in the NFC last year. We had 3 3-point wins to win it. So it wasn't like we just ripped through the NFC and won.
It wasn't a dynasty.
It's not a dynasty. And so it's not like, hey, one tweak here, one tweak there, and we're back to being a top two seed in the NFC. We won, we maximized. To me, starting this offseason and into next year, I'm going to start exploring Jalen Ramsey in particular. What can I get back for Jalen Ramsey? Because I think he is no longer all pro Jalen Ramsey. Can I get some picks back for him? We got some young, aggressive guys in the secondary who have played well in spots. And I don't know if that's necessarily an essential position to be in contention in the modern NFL. I'm going to look to explore what I can get for Jalen Ramsey to try and get some things back to bolster my team for one more year, but also the future. And then next year, I think this time next year, if we're in a similar position, I'm really exploring what I do with Stafford and really start figuring out what is going to be my quarterback plan of the future.
Yeah. I mean, that's the hardest thing, Jamal, because if they decide, I agree with you and everything you said, but if they decide this offseason, okay, we're going to not necessarily mail it in because there's still some talent, but we're going to trade some top heavy players, the Jalen Ramsey, maybe even a Bobby Wagner. Outside of Donald and Kupp, anyone else like is not off limits, let's say. But if they do that, then what are you saying to Aaron Donald, Cooper Kupp, and Matthew Stafford? Like, why wouldn't they retire then if you're mailing it in like that? However, if you don't do it that soon, then you're going to miss out on those franchise QBs of 2024, and you want to wait till 26 to get your franchise QB and have 2 years of just dark space where you can't be building this elite fan base into supporting you. So it's such a difficult thing to navigate, which is why people like Les Snead make a lot more money than we do. But I think the future of this team from 2024 and beyond absolutely resides in getting that quarterback through the draft that the team and the fan base can grow with. 100% agree. And that, I mean, you see what the Chargers are building. I know a lot of people don't want to hear it. And there's the false narrative of no fans here in LA. They're growing not at this massive, massive rate because yes, they need to go win and continue to win, but they are growing. If you look at the youth, see a lot more Herbert jerseys than I see Stafford jerseys. Let's be real. If you look at social media, there's a lot more engagement with the Chargers than there is with the Rams. It's because of people like Justin Herbert, who was drafted by the organization, and the kids and the young fan base is growing with, has fallen in love with, has captured that audience. And that's no disrespect to Stafford, but he was traded here. He's been here for now a season and a half. And so they need to get that Caleb, that Bryce Young, that whatever it may be down the line. Maybe it's as far as Malachi Nelson, future USC great and low-sal kid here in SoCal. So that, I think, is what they need to be thinking of for the future. But it's really going to be complicated as if they decided that this offseason or try to push off farther, because that's just going to alienate, obviously, the roster they have right now.
Well, Ryan, here's the other piece. And I think this is where I would push back a little bit on Donald in particular. I think Kupp is young enough where I think he would be excited about being that bridge between a Stafford and the young quarterback and having his legacy in LA as the greatest receiver in Rams history and being able to bridge two eras together. So I don't think there's a big challenge in getting Kupp on board because he's also younger. He's just going to turn 30.
Yep.
I think with Donald, it's a very real conversation. Enjoy your money. You've got two more years. And one of the conversations all offseason was there's no way he's going to retire because he's not going to leave that money on the table. And so I think that Donald still has 2 years left on his contract. And look, he's arguably the greatest defensive player in the history of the NFL. No doubt about it. But he's going to be 32 next year. We're much closer to the end than to the beginning. Does he have one more elite year left? Maybe two, certainly not beyond that. So I'm actually less concerned about alienating an Aaron Donald. If he wants to retire, that's his choice. I have a hard time believing he's going to leave another $30 million on the table. I think this time next year, I think very well he could retire, but I think he's going to come back one way or another to get that final payday and retire as a Ram. So I would call that bluff a little bit. I think Kupp is excited about being a bridge. And I think Donald's getting paid. It's kind of like the Aaron Rodgers situation with the Packers. It's like, look, dude, you're unhappy with your receivers. Enjoy your money. We paid you, now, you know, enjoy and let us do our job. I think it's a similar situation with Donald.
Well, and realistically, they could go all in and Donald could still retire. So he almost retired this year. So they could go all in, continue to mortgage the future. And he, after one more year, is like, all right, I want to be with my family and kids with absolutely he can do is his prerogative, but that would just screw them over even more. And that's something that I'm sure is in their thought process. And I'm sure knowing this organization, there will be conversations had like, hey, if we're going to do this, like, are you in, or are you kind of half and half? Cause if you're half and half, then we're not in and we're going a different direction. So it'll be fascinating to see. Jamal, still have half the season left. Feels like the season's probably over, but hey, there's still games to play. You never know, any given Sunday. So we will obviously be back later in the week to preview the Rams' next matchup, see if they can maybe run the football, get back on track a little bit. But that will be another conversation for another day. So for now, for Jamal Madney, I am Ryan Dyrick. Thank you all for tuning in to the LA Football Show, Rams House Edition. Make sure to like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and on YouTube and LAFBNetwork.com. Everyone have a blessed week. We'll talk to you all here in a couple days.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.